Welcome to Our House, the only complete on-air resource for your home ownership needs. Now, here's the host of Our House, Peter Hunt.
Good morning and welcome to Our House. This is Peter Hunt, and this show is brought to you by the all-new HuntRealEstate.com, where everything is truly easier for your real estate and home ownership experience. And go there today. We've got, among other things, three algorithms for you to utilize that are automatically calculate from three different technological perspectives the value of your home or any home anywhere in any of the markets we serve. HuntRealEstate.com is powered by Hunt Real Estate ERA all across upstate and even into Massachusetts now and out to Phoenix, Arizona. The show is also brought to you by Hunt Mortgage. I encourage you to call them today, 633-3700, and ask one of our skilled mortgage consultants to work with you to find the lowest rate and closing cost for your particular home financing needs and wants, and that's a guarantee. We make sure that you always get the lowest rate and closing costs through Hunt Mortgage whenever you call. And ask about one of our many exclusive programs, including our pre-purchase commitment that allows you at no cost or risk to effectively enter the market to find your next home with cash. And in today's kind of low inventory market, if you do find the house you want, you'll want to make sure that you're as competitive as possible. And one of the ways to do that is by assuring the seller when you present your offer that you're able to perform. A qualification doesn't do that. A commitment does, or obviously cash itself. But a mortgage commitment is as good as cash. And all you need to do after you get that commitment, which has no risk or cost to you, is to find the house to associate with it and then have that appraised, and everything will fall together thereafter. So call Hunt Mortgage today, 633-3700, for personalized, customized, what we like to call knock your socks off service. And check out that low rate guarantee. There are some restrictions, but I want you to take a look anyway at huntmortgage.com. And don't forget the first ever 24/7, 365 real estate hotline, the Hunt Hotline, which gives you access to all available information about any property. It's any property listed anywhere in the markets we serve, simply by dialing 716-631-4800. Enter the street number of the house you want to know about, no matter whose listing it is. It doesn't have to be ours. It could be anybody's. So you drive by a sign. It's got all this stuff, all this noise on it. Just remember this number, 631-4800. Call that number. All you need to know is the street number of that house. The system will prompt you with a choice of street name. Select the one you want. You'll hear a brief description, and then you'll be texted a link to a dedicated website on that particular property. It's all automatic, just that fast, anytime, in any market we serve, on any listing, whether it's ours or any other brokers. No other service like it in the marketplace. This is the summer market. It's a busy market. June was an excellent market, excellent time in the real estate market from a sales perspective. For some of you looking for a home, it might have been a frustrating experience because inventory is low. So if you're thinking about selling your home, there may have never been a better time, excuse me, from a value standpoint, because of the shortage of inventory. Obviously, in the supply-demand world economy that we live in, if there's low supply and there's high demand, values tend to go up, and that's exactly what's happening here. Our average sale price has never been higher than it is right now in our company, and I encourage you to take advantage of that, or think about taking advantage of that. If you look around your house and you say to yourself, maybe this isn't the right house for us at this time in our lives. So, and if you get to that point, you'll also want to know that your house is sold. And there's only one way for that to happen, and that's through the seller security plan at Hunt Real Estate, which is very simply, we will sell your home or ERA will buy it. That is the seller security plan, and you should call 633-9400 or stop into one of our many open houses and ask one of our professional agents about that today. Hunt is the official real estate and relocation provider of our hometown professional teams, the Buffalo Bills, the Buffalo Sabres, and even the Rochester Americans. And yes, we do support the Buffalo Bisons as well. We are live this morning. If you'd like to call us here in the studio, it's 803-0930 or 1-800-616-9236 if you're long distance, or star 930 if you're mobile. Those are all free calls. So join us on the air today at Our House. And to join me in this conversation, which I think is particularly important today, is member of the New York State Senate, Chris Jacobs. Good morning, Chris.
Good morning, Peter.
It's good to have you back.
Thank you.
It's been about 6 months since you were on last, and there was a bunch of things that we were talking about at that time. And I know you've got a few things that are you know on your mind in the State Senate. But just from a perspective of what's going on there right now, what are the kind of key issues that you're facing in the Senate right now?
Well, it was a challenging session for sure. I was, and we're out now, and The budget is always the key. That happened a little bit earlier in session. I think this session, as far as accomplishments, some of my accomplishments I felt were more what didn't happen than did. In the early stages of the budget process, the governor had proposed $1 billion in new taxes and fees, and the assembly added on to that in their budget proposal, bringing it up to $1.4 billion. And, we're here in New York State, which has some of the highest taxes and fees. A lot of them people don't realize that they pay. So we spent a lot of time at the Republican conference pushing back on that, and we're able to successfully block all of that, and in the final budget, none of those $1 billion in taxes and fees were passed.
How do you stop that? The legislature is predominantly Democratic and supportive of, obviously, what the governor's going to put forward, and maybe, as you say, adding on to it, which is always fun and games. So how do you stop that?
Three-way negotiations, and we just held firm that this was one thing that we were not going to compromise on, that we felt that we made the case that the majority of things that wanted to be achieved in the budget could be achieved with the current revenue that we had, which is a lot, and with some cuts of things that maybe we couldn't do in this budget, so we prevailed on that. There was also some efforts in the budget to really weaken some policies that have been good for New York, and particularly good for upstate and western New York, and that was the 2% property tax cap, which has been in since, I think, 2011. And certainly we would like to see that we have property taxes is one of the biggest, if not the biggest, impediment to our growth. And the 2% cap, really what it is that a local government needs a supermajority to be able to increase their property taxes annually by more than 2% or rate of inflation, or 2%, whichever is less. And that's really bent the cost curve, the increases, and slowed the dramatic increase in property taxes over the last 7 years. And there was an effort to get rid of that, which we succeeded in keeping the tax cap. And then finally, there was a real effort to weaken the STAR and enhance STAR programs, which were again going to the core of the property tax problem. So those were some big wins in terms of keeping things going and avoiding some really bad policies, so we can continue to try to keep the good momentum we're seeing. So it was a lot of defense this time around, but I think it was an important defense.
I'm sure you look around and see what's happening in other states. We have to, obviously. And one of the things that came out this week was the ranking of states by their business friendliness or business climate. I can't remember exactly how they termed it. The number one state in the country is Texas. Hmm. If you look at the total number of jobs growth in the country in the last 12 months, and you look at the number of jobs grown in Texas alone, they're about the same. So whatever was gained there is pretty much neutralized by what's happened in the rest of the state. So some were winners and some were losers. But the whole rest of the country basically neutralized itself versus what happened in Texas alone.
Is that right?
Wow. So it's a shocking thing when you think about that. And then you drill in and see why that's happening. Now, if you look on the negative side, there's great criticism of their educational system, et cetera, and we know that those are – and there's a poverty issue, that which there is in every state. But if you look at New York State, even compared to New Jersey, for example, had a very interesting conversation with a friend of mine who was just had retired from president, CEO, and chairman position of an international publicly traded company. We're talking about his move. He's moving from New Jersey to Georgia, which is where he's from, and a promise to his wife that he would move back there. It was supposed to be a 5-year deal. It became a 25-year deal, so he owes her a little bit. But he told me a shocking statistic. The top 100 earners in the state of New Jersey pay 10% of the entire income tax in that state. So if you lose one of those people, you can do the math how much you lose. Well, a whole bunch of them are moving out, and to replace them by, you know, a normal middle class earning family. It takes thousands of people, because these are hedge fund people. They're CEOs and chairmen of businesses that operate in around the New York metropolitan area, our state, mm-hmm. for the most part. And it's just a shocking statistic. And yet, as I think about our state, we have similar vulnerability.
Absolutely.
Because of the concentration of high earners and wealth in downstate. And if the business climate is perceived as being negative, or the other states just simply come after them,
right,
promising them lots of things like the Carolinas, Texas, Florida, pick a state, it becomes a significant loss to the state. And when I hear you say things like we stopped more taxes, I mean, is there a consciousness in your mind in Albany in general about where we really stand relative to the rest of the country in terms of our competitiveness for every job and every business?
I don't think so. And what you're describing about New Jersey is absolutely a similar case here. Right now, 40% of the New York State's tax revenue comes from earners of $1 million or more. So that is a very mobile population of people. And when you talk a lot up in Albany about new programs or major new funding efforts that always come up, the question, which is rarely asked or not asked enough, how do you pay for it? It's always, well, tax the rich. And the fact is that we have an incredibly progressive tax structure in New York State. And the question is, how much more would you be able to tax that small percentage? We have our eggs in a very small basket. At one point in time, will you just tip that over and people really start leaving? And, you know, I'm concerned. I think we're already seeing it a little bit. The governor for a long time said, oh, that's not the case. They don't leave. And then once the Federal Tax Act was passed, suddenly he's worried about it. But
for good reason.
For good reason. But he just, when he was pushing,
that makes us all the worse off.
Absolutely.
In spite of the fact that we get, you know, the individual earner is better off, we're worse off because now that the relative burden of the state tax is that much higher.
Absolutely. And what we've seen, too, is the governor would often point to, previous to the federal law being passed, Federal Tax Act, that we haven't had a lot of loss of people. But what we've had a lot of people maybe still work in Manhattan, but they're not living in the state, so they're paying less taxes. But that's the first step out of the area. So when people propose, like a lot of people have been proposing single-payer health care in New York State, and their solution is to dramatically increase the tax on those small amount of major earners, the problem is, if not only the sustainability of that additional amount of money funding this major new element of healthcare, the risk is also that we would have a mass exodus, and it would undermine what we have as far as supporting everything else. So it's not a stable funding structure, and it also, as you point out, it is one of the reasons why we've incrementally, on an annual basis, lost population in this state.
And this is a kind of a odd challenge here, because it comes in many forms. But one of the forms, from a real estate perspective, looks something like this. Let's look at the New York City real estate market, for example. New York City real estate market has gone up and up and up and up and up. But right now, there's been, in the past two quarters in New York City, it's way off.
Really?
Year after year, year over year, way off. 25% in the first quarter. We haven't got the final numbers for the second quarter. 25%. Wow. Now, the average sale price is still $1.9 million in Manhattan, for example, for any kind of dwelling. $1.9 million. Problem is that a lot of these people aren't living there full time.
Exactly.
They're foreigners. They're wealthy people from other parts of the country, and they buy an apartment just to have real estate in New York.
Right.
So it's not so. If you look at the businesses that surround these apartments that really are built upon full time residents, they're all affected. And this is true of any kind of second home community around the country. It's very hard to support a retail and restaurant business, all that hospitality, when you've got people there a few months of the year. And in some of these cases, a lot of these apartments are $5-6 million, and people live there two weeks a year.
Mm-hmm.
So there's a fundamental change in the dynamic in New York City. So it's not people are going to New York City just to go to New York City to work and live. They're going there. It's a vacation. It's becoming a vacation spot.
Hmm.
And the other side, the other end of the spectrum is the immigrant population, which supports, frankly, a lot of the labor in that community, and a lot of that is undocumented immigrants, as you know, which creates another layer of issue. But if you look at the difference between upstate and downstate, going back, say, 25 or 30 years, the difference in values might have been 50%, 60%, 70%, maybe 80% difference. Now it's 1,000%.
Mm.
We've got, you know, the average sale price in upstate might be $140,000, $130,000. And average sale price in Manhattan, $1.9 million. Spread it out to the entire New York metropolitan area, it might be $800,000 or $900,000. So you've got a situation where there's really two states here.
Exactly.
And from a basic financial perspective, and I know I've spoken to other people in that are state officials, and they tell me that it's possible, for example, to look at laws, legislation that you pass, and make it in effect a two-tiered kind of law. Is that discussed in the state senate? How does that work?
It is, and I think that that is the New York is like no other place, and as you articulated now, it's even got dynamics that that haven't been there before, but a recognition that that is a different universe, and impact, the resiliency to, you know, increase taxes or fees is different there, and that the one example most recently was the minimum wage, where they did, this was before I was in the Senate, but when they finally agreed on increasing the minimum wage, they recognized that upstate, West New York, Central New York, different. So the ramp up was, and the calendar as far as when they would go to 15 was much different. New York City is going much more quickly. The rest of the state is not. And I think that in the future, I really think we should look more at that. I certainly advocated for that because just some of the things that want to be done in New York City, I sometimes feel like if you're the New York City area and you think the city can handle that, that you go ahead, but it would be very damaging to upstate. And there's many issues that I've seen on that. So I do hope that would be where we would be going.
But if that's the case, and let's say I'm a downstater and I'm all of a sudden there's a new tax or regulation thrown in my face and say, well, enough's enough, and I leave. That tax burden doesn't go away.
Right.
I mean, the state's counting on it, so that has to be spread over fewer people,
right,
fewer wealthy people.
I guess I would, and I agree with you. I think a lot of times what happens is we have to enable a local government to be able to do something like the sales tax.
Right.
Sales tax rate. Should I be telling Erie County what their sales tax rate is? I think that they have elected officials at the local level. I would hope they wouldn't raise sales taxes, but same issue downstate. If the city of New York requests the ability to do something, I believe in local government if they want to do it, and then they're going to be judged by their voters if it was a good decision. I do think that, as you pointed out, a year ago I might have said more that New York was completely resilient, but I am seeing now that even New York City is reacting to some of these kind of ridiculous policies and costs that are just causing even New York to hurt. So I think even New York after a while can be impacted by kind of bad policy.
It's truly an international city, and so there's kind of a insulation there, but it doesn't that doesn't positively impact the state as a whole, because what we need is people that live and work in
right.
the state.
Right.
And that's the key. We have a caller on the line. We'll take this break before the break. This is Gustav from Williamsville. How can we help you?
Well, good morning. Is it time to stop calling the Buffalo Billion, and calling it the taxpayer billion, and maybe saying that these types of projects are not the solution but the problem for New York State's lack of competitiveness?
Interesting comment there. As I hear it, and I'd like your interpretation, the Buffalo Billion was a decision to reallocate some dollars.
Mm-hmm.
But they're taxpayer dollars, I think, was what Gustav was saying, not Buffalo's dollars necessarily.
I think that we really need to reevaluate how we do our economic development in New York State, and this type of discretionary grant-making where the government is picking winners and losers and saying, we think this is a nifty area we should get into, and we're going to dump a bunch of money into this one thing. I just don't think that that's good public policy. I think it does lend and become very vulnerable to problems that we're experiencing right now as far as things that are in the paper every day right now. I would much rather see more of a using those funds to decrease overall the cost of doing business for every business in the area. Or if we do sometimes need to target things, do it in an objective way where you apply to a process, there's an objective evaluation criteria, and then that's how it's done. You know, something like how the historic tax credits are done and as a right. But this kind of discretionary, it really is a problematic, and I don't think it's a well-served source of our limited government dollars.
We'll come back and talk about happier topics after these very important messages from our house to yours.
Hi, this is Linda Malaya, president of Hunt Mortgage. When it comes to the single biggest purchase of your life, it pays to shop around. If you think you've found the best rate available for your home loan, why not let us take a second look? We'll review your rates and your terms and try to see if we can do better. And just for giving us a shot, we'll give you a $50 gift card.
Hunt Mortgage is a licensed mortgage banker, New York Department of Financial Services, and an equal opportunity lender.
Welcome back to Our House. This is Peter Hunt, and the show is brought to you by the all-new HuntRealEstate.com, where everything is truly easier for your real estate and home ownership experience. HuntRealEstate.com is the only place on the web where you can find a complete inventory of homes available in Buffalo, Niagara, Rochester, Syracuse, Albany, all the way through upstate into the Adirondacks and even out to Phoenix, Arizona. You'll also find access to a complete set of home ownership services at HuntRealEstate.com, which is powered by Hunt Real Estate ERA. The show is also brought to you by Hunt Mortgage, and for more information about our many exclusive programs, including the one that allows you to roll the cost of home improvements into your mortgage, allowing you to effectively buy the before and live the after, call 633-3700 and ask for details. And ask about our pre-purchase commitment and even our warm home loan as well, only at Hunt Mortgage, 633-3700. And if you want to hear more about what's going on in the mortgage market, go to our website and look for the podcast on last week's show with the president of Hunt Mortgage, Linda Malaya. Some very interesting insights into the interest rate climate and what may happen or may not happen in the future, but certainly what the market has already priced into the mortgage world that we live in today. And if you'd just like to pick up the phone and ask a question about anything relative to real estate, there's only one place to call. That's the Hunt Real Estate ERA Customer Service Center at 633-9400. That's the only one of its kind in North America. One of our customer service reps will instantly direct you to the appropriate professional for your particular needs, whether you're considering buying or selling a home, financing a home, insuring a home, or even fixing up the one you have. And remember, our guarantee stands. We will sell your home or ERA will buy it. There's no more, I guess, detailed and specific way to go about selling a home than through the seller security plan, available only through a Hunt Real Estate ERA agent. I'm in the studio today with Chris Jacobs. Mr. Jacobs is a member of the New York State Senate and also has been a local developer, and I think has fairly unique insights into what we've been talking about, which is what role the state plays in almost any kind of development in this area. And in the past, Chris, just go back to the state itself. There were a couple things that you were working on, and I just want to hear what's happened to those things. Number one, the issue of workers' compensation. How do we stand on that in an absolute sense and also relative to our competing states?
That is one area that I am happy that we were able to, I think, do reform, substantive reform last year in the budget. We passed workers' comp reform. And what we have seen, the data I've seen is there's been near a double-digit decrease in workers' comp rates for employers in our area. And when you talk to businesses about if they compare their books to another state, a competitor in another state, workers' comp would be one area where they pay a lot more. So the ability to bring that number down is very, very good, and hopefully it continues. And I think there's a lot of other areas we need to focus on as far as cost, but that is one win we did have, and I think it's bearing fruit.
I'm delighted to hear that. And if Dominic were in the studio, he's wandering or someplace, he'd definitely ask you about the scaffold law. Now, this is something that seems to be terribly persistent, and I think we're the last state in the country with anything like it. It's been in existence for who knows how long. And it's a built-in additional cost. Anybody wants to build anything, as you know only too well. What is really the potential for that no longer being part of our kind of ringing overhead in this state?
You know, again, as you mentioned, the scaffold law is a situation where it's a law that it's been on the books for over 100 years, when it was probably put into effect when there was no other labor laws and no OSHA and all the other things that you know as a person who's done development or construction has to abide by. But what it says is if somebody is elevated on a ladder or on a step ladder and falls or hurts themselves, that the owner is absolutely liable, irrespective of if contributory negligence of that person, if they were under the influence of alcohol or drugs or didn't decide to strap themselves in and adhere to what they'd been trained to do. And this adds a significant amount to what developers and contractors and others have to pay in terms of doing a project. I had heard a number for the Tappan Zee Bridge project. I think it was $300 million in additional cost on insurers just because of that law. It is a hard one to get reformed. There's interests that benefit from the cost.
Who benefits from a law like that?
I think
besides the I think the insurance agencies probably benefit.
Because
there's a commission on that $300 million.
They do. They always seem to be complaining about it too. But I think that certainly I'll say the trial attorneys are the ones that I've been lobbied by, saying that this is a good thing, that it doesn't raise costs, and there is a
how do they possibly argue that? I guess everybody's got, you know, perspective, but how in the world could that be argued successfully?
They claim that the insurers are not being truthful, that that the insurers are gouging their clients using the scaffold law as an excuse. You know, I find it hard to believe.
Anybody who watches television and watches the ads knows that there's two major groups of advertisers that are relatively persistent: the automobile dealers and manufacturers, and the trial lawyers.
Absolutely, and I've talked to many a developer who has had ridiculous claims on them, and when somebody that they had employed did something completely irresponsible, like was drunk on the job and fell off a ladder and suddenly had this life-altering injury, and they get $2 million, $3 million, $4 million claim. I don't think we're much safer than many other states.
Well, how could we be?
Right.
When
so,
there's more construction going on outside your state.
49 other states are getting away, are surviving without it. It's something that's come up over and over again, and it really shows that there's some entrenched interest in Albany that push. And I think the Senate Republican Conference has tried. We were hoping actually this year we might get something through. It's something that's always been on our agenda.
Let's jump to your chair position on the Commission on Regulations. How's that going?
Well, I think I've come to realize how onerous the regulatory environment is. Not that I didn't know it, but we have about twice as many regulations in New York State as the next close to state. So we have about 300,000 regulations. I think Pennsylvania next to us has about half that. And I think the other thing that really amazed me as I've gotten into this, my kind of civics 101 was that, you know, the legislative body passes a law, the governor signs it into law, passes bills, the governor signs it into law, then it goes to the respective agency that's going to administer that law. They pass regulations on how it's going to really operate. But what I've become aware of...
10 pages to 1.
Right.
Ten pages of regulation for 1 page of legislation.
Exactly. But what I've come to realize is the agencies have the ability, and they've grown over time, to basically promulgate regulations on their own without the legislative initiative. And they do that more often than the legislator passes laws.
How do they do that?
They will, for instance, they'll use a law that was passed years ago and justify that enabled them to do more things, like the minimum wage ordinance. That, remember, the governor originally imposed increasing the minimum wage or the DOL, Department of Labor, on fast food without legislative approval.
Right.
They pushed it up, and so that's on a different scale. They're going very quickly up to 15, the McDonald's of the world and things. And that wasn't done. The legislature had no say in that. And Department of Financial Services, Department of Health, DEC, they do this all the time. And they're a legislative, governmental entity, executive entity, all unto themselves that run rampant. And it's really an undemocratic way of doing things, very untransparent way of doing things. And we really need to work to rein in this, because it is one of the reasons that we have twice as many regulations, duplicate regulations that basically do the same thing the federal government does, but does it in a different way. The amount of paperwork, the amount of cost, a huge unfunded mandate on businesses and local governments. And so it is a damaging thing to our area.
You in one of your past shows, you talked about term limits for legislators. What about term limits for bureaucrats?
I think that there's...
The point is, because, I mean, basically, unless you commit some kind of heinous crime, your job is pretty much for life once you enter the bureaucracy, unless you totally screw up.
Right. No, absolutely. There is dramatic need for more check and balance on this. And I just think that... This governor has taken his executive kind of power to a measure that has never been done before, and in turn, you know, leader sets the tone. His agencies have done the same. So if you talk to anyone that has oversight from the Department of Financial Services, they will tell you over and over these regulations come out. They pass them through in emergencies, which really is not the spirit of the law. So there's no input from those that are impacted. And what we've seen, you know, with the president who's reined in, I think that has been reined in regulations. That has been as much a catalyst for the economy growing as the tax reform. Mm-hmm. And I think the same thing could happen here in New York State.
And that would be very exciting. We have a caller on the line. Chris, this is John from Rochester. John, how can we help you?
Hey, Peter. Hey, Chris. You know, you were talking about the scaffold law, and I had read and heard that Illinois was one of the last holdouts other than New York State on the absolute liability issue. And when they did reform their scaffold law, and it turned out that the safety actually got better when they reformed the scaffold law to make it more commonsensical. But, you know, I wanted to comment also on what I see from upstate is a lot of people leaving, people that are working people that are retired because of the taxes, et cetera. And there's still an influx of people that come into the state, whether it's upstate and downstate. Have you seen any statistics on the quality of people that are coming in? From what I see, productive people are leaving, but the majority of the people that are coming in are need a lot of financial help and are welfare type people and non-productive people. To me, it's going to take us to the brink. What are your thoughts on that?
Well, two quick things. I have heard that about the scaffold law, and I could see point being made that if I'm an employer, why should I care about making sure my work site is safe and I'm crossing every T and dotting every I, because I'm going to get sued anyway and lose because I have absolute liability. So why impose the cost or time on it anyway? I just got to throw up my hands and just let the courts decide. And the other issue, we are losing people who are want to work because the jobs are going elsewhere, and that decreases the pool in terms of taxpayers. So that is a major issue.
And we'll be back with more from our house tiers after these important messages.
Hi, this is Linda Malaya, president of Hunt Mortgage. When it comes to the single biggest purchase of your life, it pays to shop around. If you think you've found the best rate available for your home loan, why not let us take a second look? We'll review your rates and your terms and try to see if we can do better. And just for giving us a shot, we'll give you a $50 gift card.
Hunt Mortgage is a licensed mortgage banker, New York Department of Financial Services, and an equal opportunity lender.
Welcome back to our house. This is Peter Hunt, and the show is brought to you by the all-new HuntRealEstate.com, where everything is truly easier for your real estate and homeownership experience. The show is also brought to you by Hunt Mortgage, the pre-purchase commitment and the low rate and closing cost guarantee. Call them today, 633-3700. I'm in the studio today with Chris Jacobs. Mr. Jacobs is a member of the New York State Senate, and we've been talking about a wide range of topics, but those that center around the competitiveness of our state vis-a-vis other states and what that may imply for our future, digging into issues of regulation, taxation, et cetera, and our relative business friendliness. But this is a show that whose mission is to help you, our listeners, protect and enhance your investment in real estate here. And a lot of that is affected by the development climate. In other words, what's going on around you. New stores, new streets, new buildings, renovation of old buildings. What's your perspective on that whole thing? You're one of the few people in your position that has actual hands-on experience in that
right.
world.
I wanted to just, as we mentioned, that we've covered a lot of the challenges that the state is facing on a statewide basis. We talked about the population challenges as far as decreasing population. And that's a broad discussion when we say upstate. But when we're talking about our area, the good news is that we're doing a lot better than a lot of other areas in upstate. I talked to my colleagues in some other areas, and it makes me really appreciate the momentum we have here. I mean, Peter, you talk about the robust real estate market. That is an indicator that something's going right, that people want to be here. And we actually, our census data is, we are a little uptick in numbers. And actually, one of the really bright spots is that millennials is the one area where we have a significant uptick. So some younger people are deciding to move here and stay here. I think there's a premium on quality of life. And there's some good job opportunities that are happening. So I've certainly tried where I can to continue to build on that. I think our the great cultural institutions that we have that enhance our quality of life, I have a lot of those in my district. So we've been working to help on things like the expansion of the Albright Knox. I just got a grant to the Historical Society, Darwin Martin House, and all those things. But also, in terms of our economy, you know, one of the real success stories we've had is our medical campus, and we certainly have the great success of our new children's hospital, which we shouldn't minimize the impact on families making decisions on where they live when they have a great hospital like that, the medical school. But as far as jobs go, we have a lot of jobs in the medical field that are here and are coming. This week I was very proud that my colleagues in the Assembly, Sean Ryan, and my colleague in the Senate, Tim Kennedy, to work with DeUville College, who successfully secured a $5 million grant for a new healthcare training facility that they're doing called the Hub, the Medical Professionals Hub. They're going to train and educate about 1,500 students a year there, both in terms of young people that are in school, going through, matriculating through DeUville, also people coming back to be upskilled. But from now to 2024, I believe, there will be, or 2026, there will be 10,000 new jobs needed to be filled in our area in the medical profession alone. So there's a lot of good careers that are coming up, and we are working hard to make sure that we're trained and ready to go on that. The other, as far as more of a traditional industry sector, I have a lot of the a lot of manufacturing. We still have a lot of manufacturing here in Western New York. The River Road corridor along Tonawanda, we have GM, which is just doing great. We have the old Dunlop Tire, Sumitomo, which is making a major expansion. 3M is over there, and a couple other, Proxichem, 3,000 to 4,000 employees that are and they are not necessarily growing dramatically new jobs, but because of the retirements, there's hundreds of jobs that are going to be coming available in that area alone. And there is a challenge that they have right now. One of the great assets they have is access to water for coolant. And Huntley Power Plant was always the intake where those businesses got that water for coolant. Since Huntley's closed, that source is not dependable long-term. I'm working with the town of Tonawanda. They want to build a new intake, and it's going to be a public-private partnership. I secured $5.5 million in the budget. It's going to be about a $30 million project, but that will secure those thousands of businesses to be there for time to come and also hopefully be a lure for another business. So those are real jobs and a lot of new jobs that are coming available, often by attrition because of retirements. But we need to make sure we support the new and also the legacy businesses that are still committed to being here for the long haul.
I've been interviewing my guests about just this topic and of the job opportunities that are going to that will automatically exist here if nothing changes.
Correct.
And there's 165,000 positions that are going to need to be filled over the next decade. 165,000 positions. That's without any new jobs.
Amazing.
And this is an amazing opportunity, which is why the United Way and the partnership are involved in this jobs training and development program, which is really, I think, groundbreaking.
Absolutely.
In its nature. But and that's I think, is a bodes very well for our community in many respects, because what businesses do essentially is chase labor in many cases. Where they can find labor to get the job done is where they're going to go fundamentally. Labor goes where the best opportunities are. We've got the opportunities here. We've got the right sauce, I think, to make something happen here. But let's look at the things you touched on, because I think they're worth underscoring. Our arts community, the whole cultural environment. These are things that could arguably be unique to our community.
Absolutely.
And there's no question that our infrastructure is second to none anywhere in upstate, or perhaps any second-tier city anywhere in this country. Our architecture, that's well known. We've done many, many shows on that topic alone, and it's staggering the impact people, when they come to this town, it's the first thing they say. I didn't have to ask them, what did you see? They immediately start gushing about what they see, which relates to our landscape architecture as well, which is the Olmsted system. And I'm sure you know about the plans for the Nicholas Golf Course in South Buffalo, mm-hmm. which is incredible if mm-hmm. you think about that opportunity. Water, access to water. Just what you mentioned about the Huntley plant, the medical campus, the waterfront itself, and the private investment, $50 million of public investment that the state and local governments put into to generate $250 million of private investment. This is an amazing thing. The medical school, which bears your family's name, the great jobs that are coming with the whole medical campus and the medical school. I've had three private tours of the school, and it's amazing mm-hmm. What's going on there, what they're still building out, and the energy. And I happened to have a conversation last week with Nikki Hopkins from Jacobs Institute, and all that's going on in that building as well, the Gates Vascular Center. I mean, this is absolutely earth-shaking. I tell people about that when I travel, you know, that what's going on in that building alone, and they can't believe that it's going on. And the stroke research, which is second to none in the world. There's nothing
Absolutely.
Nothing like
Absolutely.
It going on. And all that's associated around all those things, and the energy that drives into the real estate market around it. And I know you've done work in that mm-hmm. in the periphery of, mm-hmm. of that whole community. So we've got a lot to be grateful
Absolutely.
For in this community.
Absolutely. So I mean, all that's happening, and our overall environment is challenging, and so what I hope to do is improve that environment, and even we see even more, and we just keep this momentum really going on a long-term basis. But I think for our area, we are looking good, and I just want to be a contributor to try to keep that momentum going.
Well, we need that local knowledge from you and hopefully your colleagues as well that are going to keep that happening. And, you know, interestingly, though, there's good things happening across other cities in the state. Some interesting things happening in Rochester, for example.
Yes, absolutely.
Which is kind of below the radar screen for the public knowledge. But it's a very, very interesting place right now. Syracuse, the whole Armory Square area is, in my mind, the most exciting concentrated urban redevelopment area, I think, anywhere
really?
In the state.
Really? Okay, that's great to know.
Spectacular. I mean, a good friend of mine from college is a dentist there, and we, whenever I go through town to go one place or another or work in Syracuse, we go out for dinner. We always go in that area and wander around. I'm amazed. It's not unlike what's going on in parts of our city, but it's highly concentrated there, and it's really just it's one area which is exploding. So we've got a lot of good things happening too, and my great wish is that what you're doing in the Senate and then legislature also, if they can wake up and smell the coffee here a little bit, that we remove some of the things that are just clearly in the way of good-minded, good-hearted business people and community activists. And I know you're doing everything you can. And just in our last couple moments here, there's always the issue of incentives, and I guess in a beautiful world they shouldn't be necessary, as you mentioned indirectly earlier. But how do we maintain the right incentives? And in our last minute or two here, and also perhaps look to others. What other incentives might we put in place that would help to keep our community?
I think the question, the right ones. One thing I had put legislation for is that requires if any state incentive program have a third-party evaluation, at a set period of time, so we can have some sort of objective measure if this is a good source of good use of precious taxpayer dollars, if there's a return on investment in terms of that investment. So I think that is something that would help a great deal. I also think that we do need incentives still, because there are certain challenges, like an urban area, an older area like ours. I think the state historic preservation tax credit has been a huge incentive to kind of level the playing field of some of the challenges we have in an older community trying to get our older building stock back to reuse. The brownfield tax credit program, huge in terms of focusing resources so we can redevelop an old industrial site versus leaving it neglected and go and redevelop a greenfield site. And that is those two things, and they're objective standards on how you hit you have to hit certain marks to get those. And those are the type of programs I think that are good. And I think if we can look at things to bring down some of those costs that make it challenging for us to continue, I would be open to looking at others.
All I can say is continue the fight, Chris.
Oh, thank you, Peter.
We need you there. We need the voice of reason and the voice of experience, and also a vocal spokesman for our community, as I know you are. And you do have kind of a very interesting district. Just describe your geography, your district.
It's very much a water district. I have, I think, more miles of waterfront than almost any district in the state. It goes from Grand Island to Angola, so it kind of runs along the Niagara River and the lake. So Grand Island, Tonawanda, Buffalo, Lackawanna, Hamburg, Orchard Park, Evans, Angola, Brandt. So it's an interesting district. It has rural areas and incredibly urban areas. I love representing the 60th Senate district.
How many people live in that district?
I think 300,000.
Wow. And how many senators are there total?
63.
Okay. And the split is almost even right now?
Yeah, 30. Well, it was 31-32, and then became 31-31 because Tom Croce, a Republican, got called back up to active service in the military. So made for a very interesting close of session.
I bet. Chris Jacobs, member of New York State Senate, thank you for joining
us. Thank
you,
Peter.
I'd like to thank all our listeners. We'll be back again next week at the same time. And remember, when it comes to real estate, all of upstate is Hunt Country.